On Tech News Today, the infidelity site Ashley Madison gets hacked. Plus, Android gets Microsoft Cortana a week early. Oh, and robots gain self-awareness. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, July 20th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is CNET.com editor-in-chief, Lindsay Turrentine. How the heck are you, Lindsay?
Doing great, Mike. It's been a nice weekend. I'm not sure I'm ready. But who is?
You are by far our bravest co-anchor because you come on every Monday when A, nothing is happening, B, nobody wants to be at work, and C, I don't know, there's got to be a C in there somewhere. But anyway.
I'm trying to make it better, a better Monday for everybody.
Thank you, and so you do. Why don't we jump right into our top story, which is about a lot of people who are not having a good Monday. The marital infidelity hookup site Ashley Madison got hacked, and the personal information of some users were leaked, according to a report by security journalist Brian Krebs. The two sites owned by the same company, which is Avid Life Media, called Established Men and, I'm not making this up, Cougar Life, were also hacked. Graham Cluley is an independent security analyst and joins us now. Welcome to you, Graham.
Hi there. I'm kind of worried that you thought of me to come on and talk about this issue.
I saw Cougar Life and I thought, you know, Graham Cluley, we've got to have him on the show. So what kind of data was leaked in this hack?
Well, it looks like not only information about the users, you know, including their names, addresses and so forth, but also information about employees who work for these companies as well, and salary and bank account information. And potentially, of course, if the hackers have managed to own the organization this completely, maybe they've also got information about your sexual peccadilloes and private messages you may have been sending to other people on the network as well. But I simply think the fact that you've been outed potentially as a member of this site, you know, might be damaging enough, mightn't it? Could be lead to some awkward conversations at home.
So who do you think this team of people creating this hack are? Do we have any sense of who these people are? Somebody with an axe to grind, somebody who is trying to profit? Who are they?
It's interesting, isn't it? What's been claimed is that it's a group called the Impact Team. And they've posted some messages online, some of which have been archived by the wonderful Brian Krebs, who's always at the forefront of any sort of breaking story about this, like this about a data breach. And it does look a little bit personal. For instance, there are comments there saying, you know, it's too bad for any men who've been affected by this hack because they're cheating dirtbags anyway and they don't deserve any discretion. But there are also comments about members of staff. At one point, in fact, there's a call out to the guy who's in charge of security at the company, sort of saying, well, you know, you did a reasonable job here, but it wasn't quite good enough. And the suspicion is beginning to point towards, was there someone actually internally inside the organization, whether it was a contractor or maybe a disgruntled former employee who might have been involved in the hack? I think it's too early to say for definite anything like that. But that appears to be where the CEO of Ashley Madison is actually pointing the finger of suspicion at the moment.
Well, it sounds like they're blaming the security apparatus or policies or something at the company. How much do we know about Avid Life Media's security? Do you think they were being responsible with the user data?
Well, I'm of the opinion that they haven't really been entirely responsible regarding this. They were making controversial headlines in the past. One of the reasons was that it's been always slightly difficult to delete your profile on this site. In fact, it was revealed on Ars Technica a year ago that if you wanted to delete your profile on the site, they would charge you in the region of about $20 to do so. But the standard option was you can hide your profile. So you don't actually delete any data from their servers. You can just hide it. And so if you ever wanted to rejoin the site, if your situation changed in the future, you could rejoin the site in the months and years ahead and pick up where you left off. Now, that's probably not such a great idea, is it? It's probably better, if you don't need a service, to permanently delete your account. And I've just seen Ashley Madison have released a press release saying, from now on, in light of the hack, you can now permanently delete your account for free. But to be honest, you know, that's closing the door after the horse has already bolted.
And you have to ask what, you know, how permanent is that permanent deletion? The whole site, the whole concept is so kind of creepy. You have to kind of assume that best intentions are not being held here by anybody.
Yeah, I mean, there's been controversy in the past regarding the site with suggestions that maybe they've been creating fake profile of women in order to encourage more men to sign up. I have to say, I was very surprised when I first saw the headlines that they had 37 million members. That seemed like an awfully large number to me. But if you haven't been able to delete your profiles, maybe it makes a lot more sense. There may be people who've temporarily created profiles, maybe simply out of curiosity as to what the site was, and then found, oh, crumbs, I can't get off this darn thing. And of course, people's situation changes over the years. This is a site which has been active for a long time, and so it will have collected a lot of information. And, you know, there's plenty of conspiracy theories about sites like this, aren't there? You know, it'd be an easy way, for instance, it'd be a perfect blackmail site if you set up a site like this and told people, sign up, tell us what you're interested in, and then you could actually have this side business. Now, I'm not suggesting Ashley Madison was doing anything like that, but it's natural that people do find some of these details being kept online for so long kind of creepy.
And, of course, it's a business that hackers can take over from Ashley Madison. They can basically steal all the stuff, as they have done, and they could set up their own site and say, well, you know, we strongly oppose this £15 or $15 charge or whatever it is to delete your data, and we now have your data, and we will delete it for the same charge.
They could do that, and there's other possibilities as well. We just saw, for instance, in recent weeks, the OPM hack. Yeah. Which affected millions and millions of federal Americans. And imagine if you took the data from a site which has been hacked, like Adult Friend Finder, which got hacked a few weeks ago, or Ashley Madison, and cross-referenced it with the OPM database, you potentially would find some high-profile or people in public positions who are members of this site who are potentially the subjects of blackmail. So there's plenty of ways of monetizing this kind of thing. It goes far beyond simply spamming people and sending them phishing emails. Now you have their email address and other details.
And of course, you could cross-reference it with the, you know, databases that have been stolen, presumably by the Chinese government, listing government employees. That would be another business model right there. Anyway, somebody's got to come up with a name for hacking different databases and cross-referencing them for extra blackmail power. Graham Cluley has it, grahamcluley.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at gcluley. Graham, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks very much. All cheers. Right. Nice chatting to you.
All right. Well, we got some more news coming right up. But first, let's talk about hiring great employees by using ZipRecruiter. The problem with employees is that they are everywhere. There are lots and lots of job boards out there, many, many job boards. And lots of people also post on social networks. And you just can't, nobody has enough time to go from site to site to site looking for great employees. That's why you want to go straight to ZipRecruiter, which will let you post to more than 100 job sites with a single click. And that includes social networks, of course, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Google Plus. It'll even zero in on LinkedIn groups and Facebook pages. You'd really cast the widest possible net with ZipRecruiter, and that's the way to get great employees. And the best part is, you're going to get a lot of responses with ZipRecruiter, and they'll help you weed out the most qualified candidates from the unqualified, so you don't have to waste your time on people who really aren't qualified for the job that you posted. They've been used by over 400,000 businesses, and you can try it now for free. We got a user testimonial. Lisa is a happy ZipRecruiter client, and she said, and this is not our Lisa, this is a different Lisa. I am a business owner, yet novice when it comes to navigating these job boards and searching for qualified candidates for my company. This morning was another near catastrophe that I avoided due to the help of one customer service agent by the name of Jed. He not only helped me out, but went above and beyond to make sure that I was satisfied. For that, I am grateful and would recommend ZipRecruiter to anyone. Of course, our Lisa uses ZipRecruiter as well, but that is a different Lisa. All right, well, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. As I said, just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. The Android version of Microsoft Cortana Virtual Assistant has been accidentally leaked about a week and a half early. Ars Technica quickly downloaded, installed, and tested the build and reported that it works just like the Windows version with a few exceptions. For example, it can't scan email for flight numbers or delivery information, but the Ars Technica report was pretty impressed by how similar it was to the Windows version. So anyone who wants the legit version and not the leaked version needs only to wait for another week and a half before this comes out. It comes out concurrent with the release of Windows 10. Are you excited about this, Lindsay Turrentine? Do you think Android users are going to want to use Cortana instead of Google Now?
I don't think if they're primarily using a digital assistant on their phone, I don't actually think it would be a great idea to use Cortana because Google Now is so well integrated and the voice recognition is very good. But that said, if they are heavy Windows users on the desktop and they have a lot of kind of cross-pollination going, then it might be really useful. And so I can see what Microsoft is doing here. They're getting ready. We know this, right? To have a lot of their services available on different platforms to make people more compelled to use Windows services on the desktop or on their laptops or their tablets. Hmm. I think it's smart.
Yeah, interesting point. Yeah, I would imagine that a huge number of Windows users on the desktop are using Android smartphones. Certainly, they're not all using Windows phones. That we know for sure. Well, Yahoo quietly released an unusual free messaging app called Live Text, but only in the Hong Kong market. The app conveys silent streaming video with real-time text messaging overlaid on top of the video. So basically, it shows a live streaming video, and the texting happens right over the top. So the background is the live video. It's likely that the Hong Kong release is just a test before the global release at some point in the coming weeks. Lindsay Turrentine, when I first saw this news, I thought, oh, that's dumb. And then I thought about it some more, and I thought, maybe it isn't dumb. Maybe this is something people would really want. I mean, it's silent, so you're not going to, you know, interrupt people. People around you can't hear your personal messaging, but at the same time, you can see somebody. So it's more intimate, more real time than just a blank page with text on it. What do you think of this idea?
Yeah, I think it's like video Snapchat is basically what it is. I kind of think about Yahoo sitting down and being like, all right, what do the kids want these days? And then thinking, well, the point that you make is a good one. They do want to share pictures. They like sharing video, but they also want to do it quietly under their desks or, you know, in the backseat of the car where their parents aren't paying attention. I think it's interesting that they released it first in Hong Kong. It's an interesting test market. Yeah. I don't like that because I want to play with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, go to Hong Kong. I'm sure that CNET.com will be happy to pay for that flight.
Sure.
Just for the test.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think Hong Kong is probably a good place to test things because, of course, nowadays if you want to hit China, you know, it's kind of like Hong Kong, the technology taste in Hong Kong is very similar to the West, and it's also very similar to China and to mainland China. So I think it's probably a good, if you're going to choose one market, it's probably a better market than either, you know, mainland China or Taiwan or Japan or the United States, each of which is kind of less sort of combining Western ideas with Chinese ideas.
And you can do your test in English. So if you've set it all up in English and that's your first foray, I think that's a good point.
Yeah. All right. Well, Samsung today announced the Galaxy Tab S2, which is similar in specs to the Tab S, but it's smaller and thinner. The S2 is 5.6 millimeters thick, which means that it's probably the thinnest tablet ever made. It's also very light at 389 grams. That's significantly less than a pound, significantly less than 0.9. It's like 8-point-something pound, significantly less than a pound. So this is a very thin and light tablet. Lindsay Turrentine, what do you guys over at CNET think about the imperative to make tablets super thin and light? I personally don't think that's a killer feature. It's impressive technologically, but is the world clamoring for a thinner and thinner tablet?
Well, no, the reality is that the world is not clamoring for any tablet.
Yeah.
I mean, tablet sales have slowed so much, and we really feel like once people buy a tablet and invest in one, they're happy to stick with it for a very long time. There are very few differentiators that cause people to upgrade. That said, once they're ready to upgrade, They're going to make a pretty rapid choice because it's a very simple form factor. And if Samsung can set itself apart by creating a really thin one, that might be a chance to get people in the door as they're making that decision, especially people who want to be able to sort of treat their tablet like a magazine, right? Travel with it, slide it into their purse, and go. So I think it might be an attractive way to get the, that first glance and get people looking at the tablet.
Yeah, could be. Well, in the research and development department, famous physicist Stephen Hawking and Russian entrepreneur Yuri Milner today announced a partnership to launch a new hunt for extraterrestrial life. The project is called Breakthrough Listen, and it will employ state-of-the-art radio and optical surveys using the world's best telescopes in the U.S. and Australia for a decade. The project will be funded with $100 million and will start searching for ET next year. Later, a project called Breakthrough Message will offer a $1 million prize for creating digital messages that represent humanity and planet Earth. And Lindsay Turrentine, my view is that messages that represent the planet Earth, I think we should just turn it over to Kanye. What do you think?
Please no. Let's not turn it over to Kanye. I always think that these conversations about how you represent the world are really interesting. Have you ever followed those conversations about creating a world flag?
Yeah, yes.
There's a lot of debate around how you do that. Yeah. And, you know, what is humanity? There's some pretty deep questions involved. But I am thrilled that Stephen Hawking is doing this. I mean, you kind of look at him and go, okay, well, he's got a lot of respect and a lot of money, and he's just going to say, let's go for it. You can kind of get the sense that he wants to encounter some sort of signal before he's gone.
Well, here's the great thing about this. Now, we're all familiar with the SETI project, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or SETI. That had been going on for a long, long time. And a lot of people might be thinking, well, we did that for so long, we didn't hear anything. We didn't really discover alien life. But here's what's different about this one. The telescopes that they're using are 50 times more sensitive than any SETI program before. They cover 10 times the amount of sky as previous programs. They scan five times as much radio spectrum, 100 times faster than before. And they're using the 100-meter Robert C. Byrd Green Bank Telescope in West Virginia and the 64-meter Parkes Telescope in New South Wales, Australia. They're going to be listening not only toward the center of our own galaxy, but also they're going to be listening to the 100 closest galaxies. And of course, any sort of radio programming from distant galaxies will no doubt be from worlds that went extinct, you know, a billion years ago or something. But still, it's pretty interesting. And I imagine that behind it also, they have a lot of computer crunching that didn't exist before, artificial intelligence that can weed out the earth noise that could be mistaken for deep space noise. But still, it's a pretty cool project, and why not? I think that this kind of thing, $100 million, I mean, that's just, Google's net worth went up by several orders of magnitude more than that the other day, just a spike from their earnings call. So it's like, you know, that's not a lot of money for something that's so interesting.
It's fascinating, and I can't wait to... I mean, you kind of feel like with a project like this, even if we don't encounter extraterrestrial life in the near future, we'll find some other interesting stuff.
Yeah, and there's... and I didn't put this in the show. I just thought of it just now, but there's a website I saw the other day, and we'll put it in the show notes after the show, but there's a site that will let you listen to the radio broadcast based on how far away they are from Earth. So they show you, like, the planet Earth, and then you zoom back. So the radio programming of the 30s is making its way in a wave across the solar system and beyond, you know, the galaxy and so on. And it'll actually play some of that music or radio programming based on how far you are away from Earth, and it'll show you how far. Anyway, it's pretty interesting. We'll throw the link in the show notes. Yeah. All right. Well, in mergers and acquisitions news, Microsoft has acquired an Israeli data security firm named Adalim, I think is how you pronounce it, for $320 million. Microsoft also reportedly plans a new cybersecurity operation in Israel. Lindsay Turrentine, we report an Israel acquisition story almost every day. I think maybe Google should just go in and buy the whole country. What do you think?
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in Israel. CNET has sent reporters over to Israel multiple times just to see what startups are happening there. And I think what's cool about all the technology that's growing up in Israel is that it's just being created from a different perspective. geographically and economically and politically, and there's some really interesting problems being solved. I mean, you know, a lot of the early messaging platforms came out of Israel, like ICQ, remember that?
Yeah.
So really cool stuff happening there.
There is, and I think they tend to focus more on technology. They got a lot of math and physicist type of technology people instead of marketing and business people. Silicon Valley is all about monetizing and apps and things like that, and at some point you need advanced technology, so there's a lot of really original technology being developed there in Israel. But nothing monetizes like Silicon Valley, so that's why we have all these acquisitions. Well, in big number news, we got a big number for you today, 97. That's the percentage of Apple Watch customers who reported being either somewhat or very satisfied with their Apple Watch, according to a survey conducted by Wristly. The number is higher than iPhone or iPad users ever were. So according to the survey, the Apple Watch is actually making people happier than the iPhone or iPad. The more technical the respondent, however, the less they liked the watch. 73% of those surveyed said their watch was worth the money they paid for it, while 12% said it was a poor value. I think these numbers sound pretty high, Lindsay Turrentine. I have to look at their survey methodology, but this 97 sounds very, very high. I hear a lot of grumbling about the Apple Watch.
I find this incredibly suspect. For one thing, if you have 12% of survey respondents saying that it was a poor value, but only 3% saying that they're not satisfied, that calls into question the math, period, right? Yeah. Like 12% go, I'm not sure I would buy it again, but I'm satisfied. It doesn't really make any sense. And I think that, you know, I think that if you caught Apple, I don't know, waking up first thing in the morning and not on its guard, even people within Apple would probably say, we have work to do. Figure out what this is for.
Yeah, definitely. The only way that I can think of to explain that number is that the people who think it's not a good value and are also satisfied are people for whom somebody else paid for the watch. So either business expense or parents paid for it. And so people are, you know, the people who own it and use it are happy as can be. But would they pay for it? No, they wouldn't pay for it. Somebody else paid for it. Well, just a theory. Anyway, in news you can lose, scientists at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in New York claim that robots can exhibit this trait of self-awareness. They built 3 robots and tested them with something called the 3 Wise Men test. The robots were asked which of them were able to speak. All of them tried to say, I don't know. But one of them could hear its own voice saying, I don't know, and then said, sorry, I now know. Let's watch the video.
Which bill did you receive?
Thinking. All right, he's going to stand and deliver here. You know, Lindsay, I think I would find this much more credible if the robots didn't look like they were from Toys R Us.
I don't know.
They do. They definitely look like something my kid owns.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know now. I was able to prove that I was not given a dummy pill.
So, you know, no, I don't buy it. So it looks like a parlor trick to me. What do you think?
Yeah, they're going to move the cup over onto the other one, move them around, shuffle them, and then see which one knows that the other one's there.
I find that this highly suspect. I think they appear to have just programmed in this behavior, which doesn't mean that they're self-aware. I think that's really pushing it.
They are adorable, though.
They are very cute. Very cute robots. And when they're aware of their own cuteness, that's when we're in trouble.
Then we have tribbles.
Exactly. Then we have children. Our TNT fan of the day is Mahad Robel in Finland. We'll see. Tech News Today is live at 8 p.m. in Finland, and Mahad says he can't sleep without his dose of TNT live, and we're so happy to put you to sleep. There it is. He's watching the last Monday show with both of us on the screen there. Very nice. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT or when, and just record a video and take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Twitter, Google+, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Lindsay Turrentine, what are you working over at CNET.com?
We have a super package up today. Yes. This year is our 20th. Birthday CNET.
Wow.
And so we launched a beautiful package today. You really should go look at it, with essays by Mark Benioff and Carol Bartz and Craig Newmark and Genevieve Bell, a lot of really amazing thinkers talking about what they've learned over the last 20 years.
From CNET.
It's awesome. Well, not from CNET. I mean, although in part from CNET. But overall, just thinking about the massive rate of change over the last 20 years, kind of what we've seen and where that's going to take us in the future. It's really fantastic package.
That sounds great. I can't wait to see it. And you can find that at CNET.com. Lindsay Turrentine is at L Turrentine on Twitter. And Lindsay, thank you so much for Garnkin today, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. You can subscribe to Tech News Today as audio or video via RSS, or you can choose some other way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at twit.tv/live. And you can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. And you can follow me on all the social networks at elgin.com. Don't miss our other news show, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. This show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.